Hello and welcome to Stories from a Small Blue Marble. My name is Brian Hancock and I'll be your storyteller. Before we get started, I wanted to thank you for listening. These stories are my life in small bite-sized chunks. I have had an incredibly charmed life and I'm happy that you're here with me to enjoy some of it. So let's get started. This story is called Sailing the Atlantics. Once I found out that my childhood love, Liz, had taken up with my childhood nemesis, Julian, aka Rob, yes, the same one that once sat on my chest and pulled my ears so hard that they ripped, I figured that it was time to leave the comforts of home and go back out into the wide world of sailing. The only problem was I was broke. So I hitched a ride with my old mate Phil Wade and his lovely then wife Susie. Phil was a delivery boat captain who had logged well over 300,000 nautical miles, taken a boat from point A to point B, and then taken another boat from point B back to point A. Phil was a wonderful man. Susie too, yes, I know that she was a woman, but she wore the pants for sure. One thing I remember about Phil the most, and by the way, may he rest peacefully, was that no matter the weather, he would always salute the sunset with a bowl of popcorn and a stiff rum. Phil was a good man, and I miss him. Phil and Susie were delivering a center cockpit shirt box from Cape Town to Tunisia. They needed an extra hand, and I was the extra hand that they needed. I could only go as far as Gibraltar. South Africans were not allowed into any country in North Africa. The sanctions against apartheid were starting to cut deeply. We sailed first to St. Helena Island, a small volcanic blip in the South Atlantic. It may well be a small volcanic blip, but it comes with a lot of history and some extraordinary coincidences. Let's start with this. Horatio Nelson, the famous British naval commander, was born on the island in 1776. His nemesis, Napoleon Bonaparte, died in exile on St. Helena Island on the 5th of May, 1812. Can you imagine? Was it coincidence or just fate? I'm not that smart, but Wikipedia says, and I quote, that these two extraordinary figures of history have a very deep common thread. The most significant confrontation between them was the Battle of Trafalgar, where Nelson's British fleet decisively defeated a combined French and Spanish fleet, effectively ending Nelson's plans to invade Britain. So now you know what I mean by coincidences. When Phil and me and Susie stopped in St. Helena, we went to Napoleon's grave, but he had long since been removed and was finally buried in France. But it was still a somber place. Well, I guess some is a bit of an exaggeration. It was just an overgrown plot in the middle of a small island in the middle of nowhere. But we went there anyway. We left St. Helena, heading for Ascension Island, roughly 600 miles away. A couple of nights into the trip, we lost our rudder. Luckily, we suspected that it might happen. It was a bit loosey-goosey in the rudder shaft area, if you know what I mean. And I'd gone for a swim and drilled a hole in the top of the rudder. No, it was not an electric drill. That might have not gone very well. It was a hand drill. You remember those? So one night when things got a little sloppy in the helm department, we found the rudder dangling in the water behind us. We already had a plan for a jury-rig rudder. Phil had lashed the floorboard to one of our spinnaker poles. That would be our new rudder. We would drop it over the transom with a halyard attached to keep it from sinking and a line attached to the keel to keep it from floating. That was stage one. Then we took the other spinnaker pole and lashed it athwartships. We let some lines from the makeshift rudder through a turning block at the end of the second spinnaker pole and back to a winch in the cockpit. By balancing the boat with sails, we were able to make a decent speed toward Ascension Island. By decent speed, I mean around 3 knots. There was something about the speed of the boat that attracted fish, and at any given time we would have maybe 50 to as many as 100 mai mai swimming alongside of us. Mai mai are also called dolphin fish or dorado. which is why I like to call them Mai Mai. It's their South Pacific name. So we had a competition, me, Phil and Susie. This was the plan. We would spear a fish. Yes, there were so many that we could simply lean over the side and shoot one. No need for a lure or a hook. Here was the competition. It was to see who could shoot a fish, land it, gut it, fillet it, cook it, and serve it in the shortest amount of time. The catch was that we had to eat all of the fish. We had no refrigeration on board, and snagging a big fish would just be a waste. So mostly we went for the small ones, otherwise we would have to gorge ourselves. The competition got intense. I would get the butter ready, the lemon already sliced, the cutting board ready, the knife sharpened, and the table in the cockpit set. Phil would hit the stopwatch. I would start the burner and throw in the butter. Then I would lean over the side of the boat and snag a fish. It took about 15 seconds to land it, gut it, and fillet it. The butter was just turning that beautiful, nutty, golden brown, and in would go the fish. In less than 45 seconds, the fish was on the plate, ready for eating. It took me years before I could actually buy a fish from a supermarket. For me, fish was always free, and those fish that we ate were about as fresh as you'll ever get. We stopped in Ascension Island. To be honest, Ascension Island is a bit of a wasteland. There are two military bases there, one US and the other UK. It just so happened that we anchored off the US base, and they helped us weld our rudder back together. It was the first time that I've ever went to an American bar, and I was completely blown away. It was huge. They had hundreds of bottles hanging from some overhead rack, and all the bartender had to do was just push up a glass against the bottle, and a full and legal tot of whatever was your pleasure poured straight into the glass. There was also a jukebox. I'd never seen or heard of a jukebox, and it was awesome. In my book of short stories, More Twisted Tales, I wrote a fictionalized version of our stop in Ascension Island. This story is one of my favorites, and it's called Nantucket Sleigh Ride. If you read it, yes, the part about me and the Dolly Parton look-alike lady having a quickie on the trash cans behind the restaurant really did happen. That part's not fiction, but anyway, I digress. We carried on to the Cape Verde Islands. They are a group of 10 volcanic islands owned by Portugal. We stopped in Brava, the southernmost island in the group. It was really, really basic. We traded big ballpoint pens for food and magazines for firewood. If I remember correctly, there were a few Playboy magazines among them. It's no wonder they gave us a lot of firewood. Then, before we left, Phil announced, "We need diesel." We were on the south side of the island in a very remote anchorage and was told by some of the locals that the only place to get diesel on the island was at the village, which was way up in the clouds. So Phil, me and Susie and one of the local kids walked for around 3 hours up and up and up into the clouds. We finally got to the village, and somehow the chief of the village had heard that we were coming, and his lovely wife had already prepared a feast for us. We were invited to his home for lunch. Can you imagine this? Three ragtag sailors having lunch in the clouds with some chief of some village on a small island in the middle of nowhere. We had a lot of wine, and by late afternoon the lunch was winding down. That was when Phil brought up the diesel situation. Turns out that the chief had already had our jerry can filled with diesel and had added another for just in case. We were drunk in a village in the clouds with two jerry cans of diesel and a long dangerous path back to the boat, and it was getting dark. So Phil asked if we could rent a donkey, but the chief smiled and said, "No donkey. The donkey is very tired, but don't you worry. My daughter will carry for you." He then presented his 12-year-old daughter, and true to his word, his daughter carried the two really heavy jerry cans of diesel back down the rocky path and to the dock. We kept trying to help, but the girl was having none of it. It took us well over 3 hours by flashlight. We left the next morning. Here, by the way, is what Wikipedia has to say about Brava. Brava is the smallest inhabited island in the archipelago and the southernmost point in the Cape Verde. Boasting deep gorges and dramatic peaks, Brava is one of the archipelago's most mountainous islands. Yeah, tell me about it. We left the next morning to sail to Santa Maria, which is one of the northern islands in the chain. These islands rely on subsistence living, fishing mostly. There was one morning that we were on anchor and we got word that there was some kind of consternation going on in the village. One of their fishermen had gone out overnight and had not returned. The whole day went by and he had still not returned. There was no way to send out a search party, so they just sat and waited. The following morning, I was up early and taking a pee off the back of the boat when I saw a small dot on the horizon. I watched it for a while and it got closer. Very slowly, but it got closer. It took me some time to realize that it was the missing fisherman. He was rowing his little boat and towing something. Turns out that he had caught a huge turtle. The thing was probably 5 feet across. He was towing it behind his little rowboat. There was, of course, huge jubilation when he arrived back at the village, and they celebrated by slaughtering the turtle. The whole bay turned red. I guess turtles have a lot of blood in them. We were invited to join in the celebration. They cooked the turtle on an open fire, and people ate and danced and sang. And then they gave us a few pounds of turtle meat to take with us. We couldn't say no. But we didn't have any refrigeration on board, so Phil made a massive curry. Phil, like myself, is from that part of South Africa that brought over Indians from India to work in the sugarcane fields, and most of them stayed, and their food and culture was very much a part of my childhood. Here's a funny side story. The drinking age in South Africa when I was a kid was 18, but we could get away with it at around 16. We would go to a bar and the waiter, usually an Indian gentleman, would ask us what year we were born. So before we went to the bar, we would all rehearse what year we were supposedly born that would make us old enough to drink. Problem was, after a couple of beers, we had no idea what our names were, let alone what year we were born. And that was when they chucked us out. In Pietermaritzburg, the town where I grew up, there was a huge Indian section. Of course, it was separate from the white section. Indians, despite their beautiful culture and huge intellect, were lumped into the same class as all black people, and therefore were considered second class. Give me a break, anyway. As kids, we would pool our money and ride our bikes to the Indian part of town. Usually, we would find some old chap willing to go into the liquor store. We called them bottle shops. And for a small payment, he would buy us beer. If we were feeling flush, we would have them buy a bottle of old brown sherry. That stuff tasted like piss, but we were able to get a good buzz going. So I digress yet again, back to my story. Phil made a super hot curry, and we spent the next few days at sea eating curry for breakfast, curry for lunch, and curry for dinner, and then hanging off the back of the boat and shitting it out, especially after the turtle meat turned. The curry spices were so strong that we couldn't taste that the meat was bad. On the way between the Cape Verde Islands and Gibraltar, we crossed the international date line. I remember that day so well, even though it's almost 50 years ago. There was no wind, so we dropped the sails and went for a swim. There is something just magical to swim in the middle of the ocean. You can see the rays of the sun go down and down until they fade to black. There are just thousands of fish. Who knew that any time under the boat, there is a whole ecosystem of wildlife? But here's my story. We stopped the boat at noon, swam for an hour, and when we got back on board, it was still noon. We'd crossed the international dateline and gained an hour. It was just one of those magical hours in the journey that we call life. Phil and Susie dropped me in Gibraltar. They continued on to Tunisia. I couldn't go because at that time I was still traveling on a South African passport. Many years later, I was able to get a British passport because my dad was born in England. Earlier, when I lived in England before doing the Pamelea race, I was sleeping with a girl from South Africa. I liked her a lot and thought that I would surprise her. Back then, there was no way to communicate. Letters would take weeks, so I surprised her by showing up at her house, except she was the one that surprised me. She was in bed with one of my best mates. Well, I'm happy to say that they're still married. So with the chance of me getting lucky gone, I spent the night in a damp, smelly old sleeping bag in Phil Wade's boat. It was a Contessa 26 and was on the Hard in the Hamble on the south of England. The boat was called Snowflake of Hamble. Life comes at you from all different directions. It's how you react that determines what kind of life you will have. Well, I hope that you enjoyed the story. Read the short story in my book, More Twisted Tales. It's called Nantucket Sleigh Ride and is a fictionalized version of the stories. This story actually happened. Anyway, as always, thank you so much for listening. For all of my books, please go to www.brianhancockbooks.org. It's .org, not .com. There you'll find all of my books, my Substack blogs, stories, and very soon my podcasts. There'll be interviews with sailing legends, and I think you'll enjoy all of the content. So please check in and say hello, and thanks as always for listening.